Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Ray Brewer. Ray is currently the Field Office Director for the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, in L.A. He's been serving in this capacity since June of 2009, consisting of more than 200 employees. The HUD L.A. office is the largest field office in the nation. Having joined HUD in 1978, he's been involved in many different departments. And as Field Office Director, Mr. Brewer represents the agency and is responsible for coordinating outreach activities and program delivery to HUD customers and communities across Southern California. Ray, we welcome you to our show.
Thank you.
Being involved in 1978 to 2016, that's a large span. It's mostly been in California, boom cycles to crash and back again. So how do cycles affect who you reach out to, and how does that change the message?
Well, HUD's mission has pretty much remained the same, which is to create a strong and sustainable, inclusive communities and quality, affordable housing for all. So the mission has stayed pretty consistent over that period of time. Of course, real estate being cyclical, that has changed. In today's environment, affordability is a prime issue, and HUD does have and is working to try to address that in many different ways.
When you're a homeowner, you think of HUD as predominantly involved in FHA loans and homeownership, does a lot more than that. But I wanted to understand, does the emphasis shift? So when you have years like, say, 2000 to 2005 versus 2008 to 2012, is there an emphasis change to where you're concentrating in one segment on homeownership and the other on affordable rentals?
That's a great question. And I'll address it by starting at the housing crisis point and then working back. I think that's a great way to describe a shift. When the crisis or housing crisis of 2008 occurred, HUD reached out to attempt to preserve home ownership with those that were struggling to make mortgage payments. And they did that through the FHA side, or the Federal Housing Administration side of the house, which meant that they provided counseling services and identified options that were available to homeowners to try to preserve and keep their home ownership. That continues this day, although we may be over the that large influx of need, that there is still need to preserve home ownership. And when homeowners get behind, they can go to a HUD-approved housing counselor agency throughout the nation of their choice. Usually we recommend going to where it's convenient for them. But the great benefit of the HUD-approved housing counseling program is that it provides that various option programs or programs that might be available that housing counselor can work with that homeowner to preserve. Now, from 2000 to 2008, and even today, we have, from an affordability side, have always provided the public housing what is known as Section 8 on the street, or the Housing Choice Voucher Program, that has continued to provide that assistance in the rental side of the house, that provides rental assistance to low to moderate income families based upon their income. that has grown from a certainly from a affordability side, because as renters continue to we try to preserve that subsidy program, rents continue to go up. So as a result of that, HUD has sought congressional approval to increase the appropriations on that side of the house so that it can keep up with the market that continues to rise.
What percentage of HUD's business, if you will, is connected to rental assistance versus homeownership, would you say? Is that a fair question?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. I think the majority of HUD's budget is, and I would say greater than 50%, is on the rental assistance side. And that, as you can appreciate, has grown over the years because, as I said, that is tied into a particular fair market rate of a particular community that HUD serves throughout the nation. So as rents go up, that subsidy or that need for subsidy continues to grow.
I read in one of the reports that there's sort of a transition taking place where you're going to go from a metropolitan approach to a zip code approach to see if that might open up more inventory for people. Can you tell me how that's emerging and if that's true?
Yeah, the program has changed a bit from certainly from, we're looking now from a zip code perspective at calculating, and I think that as we move forward, you're going to see a look at how HUD can leverage its assistance across the nation in all areas. So that we have a rental assistance demonstration program that has been in place for a number of years now that hasn't always been in place to augment the Housing Choice Voucher Program. Again, HUD's Housing Choice Voucher Program, I can give you a dollar amount for the request for the 2017 budget. That alone was for $38 billion, which we think would help 4.5 million low-income families throughout the nation. So we think the basis, though, is the Housing Choice Voucher Program that serves the majority of people. And again, that $38 billion is a huge chunk of the $47 billion that was appropriated, I believe, in fiscal year 16.
Is the $38 billion, is that fairly consistent over time, or has it really grown in the
last?
No,
that has grown over time.
Okay.
And again, that's grown over time as a result of calculating the calculations involved in the Housing Choice Voucher Program.
The Section 8 and Housing Choice Voucher is equivalent terms.
Yes.
More need terms than houses, or more houses than need? Do you have more demand than you can supply?
Oh, demand far exceeds the supply. We could probably use twice as many housing units than we have money appropriated. It, just the demand far exceeds the supply, particularly in urban markets like Los Angeles.
Right.
Is a good example. New York is a good example where demand far exceeds the supply.
How does somebody qualify for a voucher? I just wonder, are there times you just say we can't take your application because there's nothing more?
Yeah, that's a great question. The Housing Choice Voucher Program is administered through local public housing authorities. Los Angeles, in particular, has one for the city and one for the county. And they're the organization that actually processes applications, and given that, again, demand far exceeds supply, submitting an application, you can't just walk into a housing authority and apply. there are windows of opportunity, and usually the housing authority will announce those periods where they are accepting applications. Both the city and county of Los Angeles is currently not accepting applications. They are working through the applications that have been submitted.
Wow. How long, if somebody does get to use a voucher and gets moved into a home, how long is that commitment for? How long is that voucher good for?
There's not a time period that a tenant can utilize the program. They can remain in that property as long as their income does not exceed that particular limit. It is adjusted based upon their income, so should their income increase, they will pay more and the subsidy will be reduced. But there's not, say, a window that's closes after you're in that, then you must move on.
How often is that ongoing qualification process where they now say, I made more?
That's done annually.
Annually, okay.
Yes, and I believe one of the requirements is that when you do have a change of income, you notify the housing authority of that change so that another calculation can be done at that time.
Okay, so if I own a rental property, at the end of the year, I probably could retain the tenant, but maybe the mix will be different. I'll get either more or less from HUD and more or less from them.
Well, the tenant residing, if that income would change, then the tenant would pay more or less based upon the particular income of that tenant. Now, the homeowner who is providing that housing unit, that's going to be based upon the fair market rate of that particular community. So that will stay pretty much fixed unless, of course, that fair market rent is adjusted.
Which has been going up. So
yes.
That's a good question. Is that, mm-hmm. is that also appraised every year to see what the number is?
It isn't appraised. It is certainly valued and looked at each year, and an adjustment is made accordingly. Yeah. There are certain percentage of the fair market rate that can be risen, that can be raised without waiving the basic requirement, and it varies from community to community, but it can only go up to a certain percentage above what the fair market value rate is without congressional approval.
Okay.
And then you're looking at changing statute, and of course statute is changed by Congress.
How long are participants in the housing voucher program usually on the program?
It varies. It's really tied to those to the income of that particular tenant who's participant in the program. So if they're able to enhance their skills, get a better job, ideally, and then their rent, their income increases, then the subsidy, of course, would be reduced. And ideally, they'd acquire skills enough where they would be able to move from the program. Then that would open up an opportunity for another low and moderate income family to use that.
Is there a demographic that is common for the housing voucher program?
Is
this young families on their way up, or is there elderly that are now on fixed incomes?
Yeah, I think it's a mixture. There are various resources available for the elderly for affordability. The Housing Choice Voucher Program is one program that assists affordability for seniors. There's a housing for seniors program that is project-based. And it works pretty much similar to the public housing voucher program, in the sense that you must be, I believe it's 62 years of age, and we have a list of these projects. It's known as a project-based Section 8 voucher, where under the Housing Choice Voucher Program, you have a voucher in hand, and you can go to a landlord of your choice within that housing authority's jurisdiction and work with that owner for that program. The project-based Section 8 program is identified with a multifamily housing complex that subsidy is tied to that unit, unlike in the movability or the mobility part of that is pretty much fixed. We have a list of those Section 8 project-based units online at hud.gov, hud.gov, where you can search by city or by zip code. So I guess my answer in a long way around is it's a mixture of those both at who are young, but also those that are elderly as well. Again, both programs are tied into income and have income limits to both of those programs.
Okay. The Housing Trust Fund, that's kind of a new development. The concept was established, I think, in 2008 as part of the Housing and Economic Recovery Act, but it sort of just received funding. So where does the money come from, and how likely is that to continue?
We think the Housing Trust Fund is, it had money, I believe, appropriated for it. But eligible activities include real estate or property acquisition, demolition costs, soft costs, financing costs, relocation assistance, and operating cost assistance for rental housing, as well as reasonable administrative and planning costs. Those are all eligible activities and expenses that can be used by the trust fund. The actual money going into the program, again, it was established, as you know, probably back in 2008. It was not funded. But over the past several years, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac returned to the public more than $187.5 billion that took us through the crisis. I'm going to jump actually to where that money actually came from. Fannie and Freddie, I believe, is where that money is coming from.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Let me give a little bit of overview. It was created to maintain rental homes, create and maintain rental homes that are affordable and available to the lowest income households in America. As I said, it was established under the HERA Act, or the Housing and Economic Recovery Act of 2008. This requires Fannie and Freddie to pay 4.2 basis points of their annual volume of business to funds. Both the Housing Trust Fund was to receive 65%, and the remaining 35% was to go to capital magnet funds. The trust fund was established to provide rental housing for extremely low-income people, and capital management fund was created to support community development and affordable housing. It's important to note that the requirement that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac contribute to the two funds was suspended when the companies were taken into conservatorship in September 2008 at the height of the housing crisis. Over the past several years, Fannie and Freddie returned to the public more than $187 billion that took the crisis that they took during this crisis. And in December of 2014, the suspension on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac's obligation to fund the Housing Trust Fund and Capital Magna Fund was lifted, and the first funds were allocated just recently.
I know that there's like a minimum $3 million to the smaller states. California got about $10 million. And it's one of the most, one of the least affordable states, both in chances to buy and expensive to rent. So out of that $10 million, what will most of that money be doing? Will it be building something from scratch or probably subsidizing a rent somehow?
I think that, again, we hope that it will be used in all of the eligible forms of assistance. We think that preserving homeownership is going to be a key. For rental assistance. We think that we really think that it's going to be a combination of many things. It'll give some resources to expanding the housing supply for the lowest income and most vulnerable people in the country, and we think it'll provide a boost to efforts to end homelessness and housing poverty throughout the country.
One of the groups that you guys really concentrate on, which is really cool, is the new, or maybe it's not new, HUD-VASH program for the homeless vet. So let's talk a little bit about that in our remaining 3 minutes.
Yeah, we think that one of our pillars of opportunity is to end veteran homelessness throughout the nation. And we think we can do that by working, all of us coming to the table, and I say all of us, both the philanthropic, federal government, local and state governments, and everyone leveraging the resources that we have will change the entire equation of homelessness for veterans. And I think you see that in certain communities throughout the nation declaring an end to, or functional zero, as we like to say here at HUD, where there's resources that every veteran who needs a housing unit will be provided in some fashion, the assistance that is needed. So we think the fund is an opportunity to leverage that resource, but if you concentrate and focus, you can prove results in your efforts. I know that here in Southern California, we've reduced the veteran homeless population by more than 30%. But I say we, and it's a collaborative, collective we. It's all of those parties that I've mentioned working together that's going to make that difference.
In the last minute, the typical age of the homeless vet, are we dealing mostly with the Vietnam era, or are we dealing also with World War II vets, or is it
now? Now I think you're seeing you're seeing both, but you're seeing, I would say, more of a World War II. I'm not World War II, a Vietnam vet in a Desert Storm. That coming back. And again, we're trying to also look at the preventative side of those veterans before they become homeless, rather than just reacting from a trying to end homeless veteran. It's, again, combination of efforts.
Ray, I want to thank you very much for taking time to join us today. We've been speaking with Ray Brewer, and he's the current field office director for HUD in L.A., and they're serving a very important function for providing housing for the people that need some assistance temporarily or permanently and helping our vets. So, Ray, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.